4:30 Eastern Wartime, your station, WEAF, New York.
This is Don Hollenbeck in the NBC newsroom in New York. First, two late bulletins from London. The German High Command says tonight that great enemy formations appeared at the coast of northern France between Calais and Dunkirk this morning. The great struggle on the northern coast of France has begun, a Nazi broadcast quotes the High Command. If true, this is a threatened landing on a new point of the French coast. The German DNB news agency reports tonight that Marshal Karl von Rundstedt and Marshal Erwin Rommel, Nazi commanders in Western Europe, are on the spot of the developments. Reports on invasion are pouring in, mostly from the enemy in recent minutes, and the enemy is busy making admissions. Admissions that our troops are pouring ashore at many places along the Normandy coast. A German broadcast says Allied parachutists have now taken over an airfield in the Boulogne-Calais area along the Dover Strait. That, of course, would be in an entirely new section of the French coast, more than 50 miles up from the earlier announced invasion area, which stretches all the way from Le Havre to Cherbourg. This new German report places the Allies in action directly across the strait from the cliffs of Dover, which, if true, would mean that the invasion is spreading out over a wide area. This unconfirmed news from the enemy says our parachute troops not only have occupied an aerodrome in the Calais area, but they have gained what is termed a foothold in that general area. Shortly before this report, NBC monitors here heard Berlin radio tell of a fierce naval engagement between Calais and Dunkirk. The British radio says that the Allied invasion line in France is now sufficiently broad to amount to more than just a beachhead. Of course, we know that additional landings are on the schedule. And from the flow of statements from the Germans, these landings are being carried out. Vichy radio has been heard saying that 200 Allied ships have been sighted off the coast above Cannes, there where more men naturally would be expected to go ashore to reinforce those already landed and pushing inland. Vichy radio admits that the Allied beachhead area has been considerably widened and that those fresh troops are leaving landing craft. Fierce fighting is taking place in the islands of Guernsey and Jersey, which lie west of the Norman Peninsula. This is another enemy report. Another German broadcast speaks of new Allied landings in the area of Carentan, just opposite the island of Jersey. I must point out here that all these reports are emanating from the Germans and, of course, must be regarded with great caution. From our own sources, the latest is more or less of a general nature. General Montgomery, commanding the armies invading France, who sent his men into battle with the message bespeaking great confidence and ending traditionally with the Montgomery send-off, good luck and good hunting. Montgomery says he's pleased with the initial phase of the operation. In Washington, Admiral Ernest King said after a conference with President Roosevelt that the invasion is doing all right so far. And here's another German report. Allied troops are said to have won full possession of the town of Honfleur at the mouth of the Seine River. Honfleur is just across the river mouth from Le Havre. The German propaganda agency, in a late summary, says that the Allied forces hold the coast for 15 miles between Villers and Trouville, which is to the south, across the Seine estuary from Le Havre. Prime Minister Churchill earlier told Commons that our soldiers have penetrated France, in some cases, several miles inland, and that the first phases have been thoroughly satisfactory with losses far less than was expected. The Prime Minister told us that our airborne landings, the landing of the troops who bore the first brunt of battle, was an outstanding feat on a scale far larger than anything there has been far in the world. The German report on this is at least four divisions of American parachute and airborne troops alone had been landed on the Normandy Peninsula. These troops from the sky created a major diversion, many demolitions. War-painted American Indians were among the first of these paratroops to land in France this morning. These Indians are a troop picturesquely self-termed the Filthy 13. They're well-trained demolition engineers, packing 180 pounds of equipment on their lean, hard bodies. As you no doubt have noted, any newscast at this time is well sprinkled with bulletins. That's how fast things are developing, and here's another one. 15 Allied cruisers and 50 to 60 destroyers are reported by the Nazi DNB agency to be operating west of Le Havre tonight. That's another enemy report. Every plane taking the troops this morning through the purple, cloudy skies of the dawn was painted with broad zebra stripes, blue and white stripes, and the planes carried colored lights. All this was to prevent a repetition of that Sicilian episode in which a number of our own transports were accidentally shot down by their own ack-ack fire. That brightly lighted armada, traveling only a few hundred feet above ground, stretched out, we're told, for 200 miles. Immediately following this broadcast at 4:45, NBC will broadcast at dictation speed the text of the prayer which President Roosevelt has asked the nation to repeat with him at 10 p.m. Eastern wartime. The prayer is about 500 words long. If you haven't been able to get the text of it, this will be a good opportunity for you to copy it down in time to repeat it with the president tonight. The prayer will be given at dictation speed, 4:45 Eastern Wartime, immediately following this broadcast. The invasion, incidentally, was scheduled for yesterday, but was delayed because of the weather. The invasion overshadowed developments on other war fronts, but activity continues on these fronts. Russian armies are understood to be massing for blows against the Germans from the east. In Italy, remnants of the German army are fleeing in disorder towards some new sort of defense line in the northern mountains. The Fifth Army is pouring after the enemy across the Tiber River in many places. Allied communiques say the battle to destroy the enemy continues without pause. And as a footnote to this assault from the west, the south, and soon from the east, Premier Pietro Badoglio announces in Naples that he has dissolved his Italian government, is forming a new administration in liberated Rome. One more bulletin from Washington this time. Secretary of War Henry L. Stimson has just told newsmen that first reports of the Allied landings in France indicated the long-awaited invasion was going very nicely. And here's a story overheard by our NBC monitors. The Nazis are suppressing news of the progress of the invasion and withholding the facts from the German people. Radio Atlantic, the German secret transmitter, says in a broadcast monitored this afternoon by NBC. What scant news that is put out by the German home radio is very confused and depressing. The people of Berlin have gathered in the streets in whispering knots, wondering where the next blow will fall. They know that nightfall and the hours of darkness now ensuing will mean more landings. Their prime question is, where? The clandestine transmitter, located somewhere in Germany, often has accurate reports of what's going inside the country. It's significant, the anti-Nazi radio points out, that though broadcasts beamed to Germany from England repeat the German claims of successes in naval engagements in the Channel, the Reich home radio has made no such statements. In all the volumes of bulletins, communiques, announcements, and stories of the invasion today, one great factor hasn't been mentioned. It may be that it's too early to get any reports. That factor is the French underground, the silent, secret army of patriots that has dared so much awaiting this day and which should at this very moment have flamed into action all over France. For days now, General Eisenhower's headquarters has been broadcasting instructions to this underground army, orders as definite and as important as any issued to the Allied troops waiting in England. Just today, General de Gaulle sent them orders from London. He declared that the Allied landings opened France's battle for liberation. Our NBC monitors heard de Gaulle urging Frenchmen to carry on the war behind the enemy's lines, to coordinate their work closely with the frontal attacks for the main Allied armies. And here in the NBC newsroom a few moments ago, we just heard Radio Brazzaville, the free French radio in the Congo, broadcasting that the people of France, following the instructions of the Allied High Command, are prepared to take up arms in back of the German lines as one man. Vive la liberté, long live the United Nations, said Brazzaville. And that's France's reply to the orders of the Allied commanders. So far as we can learn now, no French fighting divisions have yet got into action. It may be, too, that this hasn't been announced, but we may be sure that French troops will be in the van of the March on Paris. Just now, it's up to that hidden army in France to strike where and how it can at the enemy, to follow the orders of their leader de Gaulle and of the Supreme Commander Eisenhower. I know something about this French underground army. In Algiers last winter, I used to meet some of its members who were reporting there for instructions, leaving France at great risk, using false names, crossing the Mediterranean, or sneaking through Spain any way they could, getting their orders and then going back at even greater risk. My French has a good deal of Nebraska about it, but I was able to get the idea of what this underground army was doing, just how important it was to the Allied cause. And I learned enough to wonder sometimes if people at home appreciated that. More, if even the Allied leaders appreciated what these underground patriots were up against. It's one thing to be a soldier with the dignity of a soldier and the assurance that goes with the proud wearing of the uniform, to carry weapons, to march and sail and fly under one's own flag proudly displayed. It's another thing to be a soldier in the dead of night, in the rags and tatters of a charcoal burner in the forest of Compiègne or on the docks of Marseille. He must move silently and swiftly. He must know how to dissemble. He must be able to keep his patriotism, his love of his country, under control. He must pretend to bow to the enemy and to his own countrymen who have chosen to side with the enemy. These men we used to see in Algiers had drawn tight all looks about their faces. Even in that bit of liberated France, they were never quite sure whom they could trust, and they did well to be wary. For Algiers and Constantine and Tunis and the other cities of North Africa were full of the enemy. We switch you now to Washington for a special broadcast, the President's News Conference. Now to Washington.
Start it there.
On the air.
This is Morgan Beatty in the White House in Washington. A few moments ago, the President held his first post-invasion press radio conference. President Roosevelt said that as of 12 o'clock today, American naval losses were 2 destroyers and 1 LST, that's landing ship tank. Losses relative to air landings were light, about 1%. He didn't say whether this meant personnel or ships involved. There were 181 reporters at the president's conference. Mr. Roosevelt said he felt the invasion was up to schedule, and, as Prime Minister Churchill would say, that is a mouthful. The president said that very few people here in Washington knew the timing of D-Day. You know, Mr. Roosevelt was alone among the high command, the only one that had stayed up most of last night to follow the voluminous reports of invasion. He studied each dispatch behind the White House blackout blinds. They were pulled down, apparently, to avoid even the rumors that a light in the White House at midnight last night might have started something. So when the chief executive faced the Washington press corps this afternoon, he was well abreast of the latest developments, but he gave us only an inkling of what these developments were. And anybody who asked any questions about them that he didn't think was proper, he promptly labeled improper. He said, however, that he was very happy, and all the anonymous and silent people around him, he meant the White House staff that he works with every day, were all smiles today. He said he had little war news, but it was all right to cover the part about the losses. He said, as a matter of fact, that we newsmen were getting things as fast as people in the White House. The invasion was definitely up to schedule. When he was asked about how closely held was the secret of invasion, he said he didn't know. He said many people here in Washington and elsewhere knew that we were sending large forces over to the other side. But you could almost number the people on your fingers of your hand who on this side knew exactly when the date was going to be. The president was asked about when this date was set. Well, did he know about it in advance? And he said that he knew that the date would be approximately in May or in early June. As a matter of fact, he added, I knew last night as the boats loaded and started to cross. The date was chosen very largely, according to the president, because of the roughness of the English Channel. The weather factor was very important. He said that we needed what seamen call small boat weather to get people on the beaches in small boats. And then he was asked again if that was a major factor on the choice of the date, and he said definitely it was. Then some of the reporters wanted to know whether the invasion across the channel was timed to gear up with the fall of Rome. You know, Rome only fell yesterday. No, he said, because we didn't know when Rome would fall. But he did say that you can now see why we did not institute a second front when the politicians and others started clamoring for it. He said, we started planning for this thing, producing the arms in December of 1941, and today's action, or last night's, was the culmination of all that planning. He said that, obviously, the last 6 months gave us a tremendous chance to bring in many more divisions and landing craft. He was asked about the Paris radio, saying he was going to London the last of June. He wanted to know if that was the summer or the spring. That was his way of evading an answer. And here's a very important point he made just before the closing. He said, the thing we should be warned against at this moment is overconfidence. It's dangerous to the war effort. Said the war isn't over by any means, and this operation itself isn't over by any means. This is Morgan Beatty. I'm returning you now to the newsroom in New York from the White House in Washington.
This is Don Hollenbeck in the NBC newsroom. A quick summary now of the events of the day. The Allied invasion is doing well. Secretary Stimson has just added his report to that news. Mostly German reports say that we've made new landings. Enemy is busy making admissions that our troops are pouring ashore at many places along the Normandy coast. The new German report places the Allies in action directly across the strait from the cliffs of Dover. That would mean the invasion is spreading out over a wide area. These are all enemy reports, unconfirmed by our sources, and should be taken with caution. Shortly before this report, we heard Berlin tell of a fierce naval engagement between Calais and Dunkirk. The British radio says the Allied invasion line is now sufficiently broad to amount to more than just a beachhead. Of course, we know that additional landings are on the schedule. From the flow of statements from the Germans, these landings are being carried out. This is Don Hollenbeck in the NBC newsroom, and that's all for now.
Also with us in the NBC newsroom is our good friend Don Goddard.
Ladies and gentlemen, at 10 o'clock Eastern wartime tonight, President Roosevelt will go on the radio and will lead the nation in a prayer that he himself has composed in this poignant hour. The chief executive would like to have the people of the nation repeat with him the words of this supplication, whatever their creed, making with him a common prayer for a common cause. The National Broadcasting Company is presenting these words at this time, spoken at a speed that will enable you to set them down. After a 2-minute interlude of music, which will enable you to procure pencil and paper, I will read the President's prayer, the prayer of the President of the United States, the prayer for the cause and the armies of the United Nations. Gentlemen, the prayer of the President of the United States. Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity. Lead them straight and true. Give strength to their arms, stoutness to their hearts, steadfastness to their faith. They will need thy blessings. Their road will be long and hard. The enemy is strong. He may hurl back our forces. Success may not come with rushing speed. But we shall return again and again. And we know that by thy grace and by the righteousness of our cause, our sons will triumph. They will be sore tried by night and by day without rest till the victory is won. The darkness will be rent by noise and flame. Men's souls will be shaken with the violences of war. These are men lately drawn from the ways of peace. They fight not for the lust of conquest. They fight to end conquest. They fight to liberate. They fight to let justice arise and tolerance and goodwill among all thy people. They yearn but for the end of battle, for their return to the haven of home. Some will never return. Embrace these, Father, and receive them, thy heroic servants, into thy kingdom. And for us at home, fathers, mothers, children, wives, sisters, and brothers of brave men overseas, whose thoughts and prayers are ever with them, help us, Almighty God, to rededicate ourselves in renewed faith in Thee, in this hour of great sacrifice. Many people have urged that I call the nation into a single day of special prayer. But because the road is long and the desire is great, I ask that our people devote themselves in continuance of prayer. As we rise to each new day, and again, when each day is spent, let words of prayer be on our lips, invoking thy help to our efforts. Give us strength too, strength in our daily tasks, to redouble the contributions we make in the physical and material support of our armed forces. And let our hearts be stout to wait out the long travail, to bear sorrows that may come, to impart our courage unto our sons, wheresoever they may be. And, O Lord, give us faith. Give us faith in Thee. Faith in our sons. Faith in each other. Faith in our united crusade. Let not the keenness of our spirit ever be dulled. Let not the impacts of temporary events, of temporal matters, of but fleeting moment, let not these deter us in our unconquerable purpose. With thy blessing, we shall prevail over the unholy forces of our enemy. Help us to conquer the apostles of greed and racial arrogances. Lead us to the saving of our country, and with our sister nations, into a world unity that will spell sure peace. A peace invulnerable to the schemings of unworthy men, and a peace that will let all men live in freedom, reaping the just rewards of their honest toil. Thy will be done, Almighty God. Amen. That is the prayer in which the President of the United States has asked us to join him as he leads us at 10 o'clock this evening over the radio. And now a few news bulletins that have just come in. A bulletin from London. The Nazi-operated Vichy radio reported tonight that compact masses, that's in quotation marks, compact masses of Allied planes are bombing the Calais and Dunkirk regions of the French invasion coast. That's some 125 miles to the east of the landings made at Le Havre this morning. It means that our beachheads are expanding, that we are going to different portions of the coast. Dunkirk, of course, and Calais are nearest to the English coast. The German radio reports that Allied paratroopers have landed just across the channel from England, there in the Boulogne-Calais area, that those paratroopers have occupied an enemy airdrome there. If that is true, and there is no reason to believe the Germans would put out a false report of that nature, it means an Allied invasion thrust directly across the Strait of Dover, 100 miles or more above that Allied beachhead area on the Norman coast. We have no confirmation of any invasion activity in this area from Allied headquarters as yet. But already we are expanding our beachhead there in Normandy. And in Stockholm, they're saying that Denmark has said today that German troops in the protectorate there have been ordered on an invasion alert since early this morning. And General Sir Bernard Montgomery says he's pleased with the initial phases of the invasion operations. General Montgomery heads the Allied armies taking part in the landings, as you know. Montgomery was quite happy as he told newsmen today that he'd given his officers a 5-point recipe for victory just before the invasion began. The 5-point recipe for victory, Montgomery said, was this. 1, Allied solidarity. 2, offensive eagerness. 3, enthusiasm. 4, confidence. And 5, all-out effort. That's General Montgomery's 5-point recipe for victory. And in Washington, Secretary of War Stimson, with smiles on his face, told a newsman that first reports of the Allied landings in France indicated the long-awaited invasion was going very nicely. He's the second Washington official today to say that. Admiral King, chief of our navies, and a member of President Roosevelt's strategic board, said that when he left the president this morning. And we learn now that the Nazis are suppressing news of the progress of the invasion and withholding the facts from the German people. Radio Atlantic, which is a German secret transmitter, charged in a broadcast monitored this afternoon by NBC, that the German propaganda machine was letting only a trickle of news out to the German people. What scant news is put out by the German home radio is very confused and depressing, and the people of Berlin have gathered in the streets in whispering knots, wondering where the next blow will fall. They know that by nightfall and the hours of darkness now ensuing will mean more landings. Where, they ask. Their prime question is where. The clandestine transmitter, located somewhere in Germany, states all this today. It is significant, says this radio station, which is called anti-Nazi, that though broadcasts beamed to Germany from England repeat the German claims of successes in naval engagements in the Channel, the Reich radio has made no such statements. It has not claimed that Allied ships were sunk in the Channel. The German radio people know only too well the deplorable state of their fleet. They recall the sober statement of a high Nazi naval official that they are up against the strongest fleets in the world. And in Washington, Henri Opinot, the delegate of the French Committee of National Liberation, says that French divisions soon will participate in the Battle of France and that French shock troops will help to open the road to Paris, the road from Le Havre, we suppose. Side by side with American and British divisions, French divisions armed with the magnificent material given to them by the United States soon will participate in the battle. French soldiers will fight tomorrow as they have fought in Africa and in Italy, where by the side of the Allies they opened the road to Rome. Tomorrow they will open the road to Paris. And Prime Minister Winston Churchill received today this congratulatory message from Premier Stalin of Russia of the Allied liberation of Rome. He said, I congratulate you on the great victory of the Allied Anglo-American forces in the taking of Rome. This news has been greeted in the Soviet Union with great satisfaction. Those are the words of Premier Stalin. And the Berlin radio reports tonight that big air battles have developed over Romania today between Nazi fighters and bombers of the Allied Mediterranean Air Force. Soon we may expect the Russians to be on the push there. This news is brought to you from the NBC newsroom in New York by your commentator, Don Goddard.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.